Welcome to Diving Deeper, where we interview National Ocean Service scientists on the ocean topics and information that are important to you. I'm your host, Kate Nielsen. Today's question is, what is geodesy? Geodesy is the science of measuring and monitoring the size and shape of the Earth, including its gravity field, and determining the location of points on the Earth's surface. Many organizations use geodesy to map the U.S. shoreline, determine land boundaries, and improve transportation and navigation safety. To help us dive a little deeper into this question, we will talk with Dr. Drew Smith on geodesy, what it is and why it is important. Drew is the chief geodesist at the National Geodetic Survey. Hi, Drew. Welcome to our show.
Thanks, Kate. It's great to be here today.
Drew, before we begin, I have to tell you that geodesy wasn't a word I was very familiar with before preparing for this interview. Will you tell us what inspired you to study geodesy in the first place?
Sure, Kate. I was actually studying land surveying in college, and during my senior year, I took a course called Elements of Geodesy. That was also the first time I'd heard that word. That course basically took the flat Earth world of surveying that I'd been studying and put it on a curved Earth. It opened my eyes to, a whole new way of measuring the world. I absolutely loved the course, and I decided to stay on and study geodesy through my PhD. After I finished, I joined the National Geodetic Survey, and I've been here ever since.
That's great. Drew, how do we measure points on the Earth's surface?
Well, geodesists, that's what scientists are called who study geodesy, basically assign coordinates, which is kind of like a unique address to points all over the Earth. If you were to stick pins in a model of the Earth and then give each of those pins a coordinate, you'd be doing what geodesists do. Before the space age, geodesists used to determine the coordinates of points by using Earth-based surveying tools, measuring angles, distances between points. Now, most of our work is done using space-based tools like the Global Positioning System, or more commonly known as GPS. But no matter what the tool is, geodesists still do the same work, which is very accurately defining the coordinates of points on the surface of the Earth in a consistent manner. This set of accurately measured points then becomes what we call a spatial reference system, which is basically a system that allows different kinds of maps to be consistent with one another.
Do geodesists need to remeasure or continuously monitor sites after they collect these spatial points?
That's a great question, Kate. And yes, we definitely do, but it's not always been done in a very efficient manner. In the past, most of geodesy was done using what we call passive control. This is a mark in the ground that needs to be surveyed or resurveyed if we're going to actually monitor how it's moving. But with space-based techniques, especially, say, GPS, we're able to actually monitor a site's movement 24/7 all the time and do it digitally and collect the data without going out to the actual site over and over again.
Well, why is that so important? Are there different kinds of motion on the Earth?
Absolutely. There's a few different types of motion that we're especially concerned with. First of all, the Earth's surface changes for a lot of different reasons. For instance, you may not notice it, but the surface of the Earth itself rises and falls about 30 centimeters, that's about a foot, every day, just due to the gravitational pull of the Sun and the Moon on the Earth's crust. Because this repeats itself day in and day out on a well-known schedule, this motion is called periodic, and we can usually compute or model this effect and remove its effect from the coordinates themselves. But this up and down motion occurs because the Earth isn't as solid as it feels. The Earth's outermost layer, which we call the crust, is made up of a dozen or so tectonic plates that ride on top of a sea of molten rock, which we call magma. This flows beneath the surface of the Earth. Scientists, they look at how these plates shift and interact, especially in relation to, say, earthquakes and volcanoes. So this raises another kind of motion, which we call secular motion. That's where something isn't repeating itself, but it's sort of going forward at a known pace. For example, each of these plates, these tectonic plates, is moving at a fairly steady pace relative to the others. So that means that, say, points on one plate, Kansas, as an example, will have a steady motion relative to points on another plate, say Hawaii. So secular motion isn't just caused by plates sliding around, though. Plates also lift up, such as the way that Hudson Bay, for example, is uplifting at a steady pace. The reason for that is because there was a huge ice sheet that covered it during the last ice age. That has since melted and gone away, and the pressure down on that plate has allowed Hudson Bay to begin to rebound slowly, so it's actually rising up at a fairly steady pace. This is exactly the same kind of motion, secular, that's going on at the Gulf Coast, such as in Galveston, Texas, or the New Orleans region. But in that case, it's not an uplift, it's subsidence due to a variety of factors, some geologic, some due to water withdrawal, but the ground there is actually sinking at a fairly steady pace. So finally, there's also something we call episodic motion. This is sort of one-time shifts, and they're usually caused by earthquakes or, say, a volcanic eruption. Basically, geodesists have come to realize that when you're trying to determine the coordinate of a point to a centimeter or so, which is really the sort of level of accuracy that we're working with today, that there's a lot of motion that we have to take into account out there.
So, Drew, how do we actually measure the Earth?
To measure the Earth, we geodesists look at it as a whole. Obviously, the surface is very irregular, with many mountains and valleys. It makes it impossible to measure every single thing because you'd need an infinite amount of data to actually model what the true Earth looks like. So knowing this, geodesists prefer to build simple mathematical models of the Earth, which capture the largest, most obvious features, and then build residual models from that to sort of describe variations from the simple model. So I'll give you an example. As a first sort of crude approximation, the Earth's shape could be considered a sphere. We could begin with that and talk about how it differs from a sphere, but really, as far back as about the 17th century, Sir Isaac Newton actually showed that the Earth was more closely related to what we call an ellipsoid than a sphere. An ellipsoid is just, it's sort of a flattened sphere. If you take a basketball and push it from the top and the bottom, you'd get an ellipsoidal shape. To be really specific, it's an ellipsoid that's rotated about its smaller axis. Anyway, geodesists have adopted the ellipsoid as the most basic model of the Earth with which we work. Because the ellipsoid is a very simple mathematical model, it can be completely smooth, and it doesn't include any mountains or valleys. Now, that's useful in a number of cases, but we sometimes need a more accurate model of how the Earth actually looks. So to account for additional detail of the Earth's shape, geodesists have adopted the geoid, which is a shape very similar to global mean sea level. But this exists over the whole globe, not just over the oceans. This is where we get into the gravity field, because the geoid is a surface of equal gravity potential energy. That's a mouthful, but basically, the geoid is not a smooth, regular shape like the ellipsoid. It rises and falls due to minor variations in the pull of gravity that's caused by mass variations of the Earth itself. Basically, the Earth's mass is unevenly distributed. You have mountains, you have valleys, you have the ocean, you have heavy rocks in one location, lighter rocks in another. And it means that certain areas of the Earth will experience more gravitational pull than others. And as such, the shape of the geoid, the different parts, will vary by as much as plus or minus 100 meters when we look at it relative to this really simple surface, which we call the ellipsoid. So even though I'm talking about these changes to gravity, the human body is not actually built to sense these minuscule variations in gravity. So although the geoid itself rises and falls due to changes in gravity's pull, it's really not something that you're going to be able to detect without very sensitive instruments. To get back to the geoid, you want to picture what the geoid looks like. You could imagine what the ocean would look like if there were no tides, no currents, no waves. If the ocean were to just settle down and become smooth as glass, all that would remain to give the ocean any shape would be these minor fluctuations in gravity causing these slight bulges and dips in the ocean. And so the ocean at rest would then be the geoid.
Okay, so there is a shape to resemble the Earth with water, which is the geoid that you just described. How does this all fit into the spatial reference system that you mentioned a little earlier?
That's a great question. It all ties in through one other topic that we really haven't brought up yet, and that is datums. Historically, geodesists worked in two primary datums, which have come to be known as the horizontal datum and the vertical datum. These separations were made because the horizontal datum, which is the thing that helps us know where latitude and longitude are, and the vertical datum, which helps us know where heights are, these were each measured in very different ways. However, that isn't as true today, now that we have GPS.
Drew, can you explain these datums to us a little bit more?
Sure. First, datums are the basis for all geodetic survey work. They sort of act as reference points in the same way that starting points do when you give someone directions. Geodesists and surveyors use datums as starting points when they create maps, property boundaries, when they build roads, bridges, other structures. I guess I'll go through the horizontal and vertical datums separately, but as I mentioned, they really are merging into one datum as the use of GPS becomes the tool for accessing both of them. Anyway, the horizontal datum is a collection of points on the Earth that have been identified by their northerly or southerly direction, that's latitude, and their easterly or westerly location, and that's longitude. Historically, to create the horizontal datum, we would mark each of these positions with a brass disc. Markers were placed so that surveyors could see one marked position from another. This is very often at hilltops, mountaintops, very remote areas. And then to connect these points together in the datum to create sort of a unified network, surveyors would actually use many different methods, but the predominant one was triangulation. So we would actually set up an instrument at one location, say at one mountaintop, and take a measurement to another point at another mountaintop. Of course, now as technology continues to improve, surveyors rely almost exclusively on GPS to identify locations on the Earth. And the beauty of that is that to connect two points using GPS, you don't have to see between the points anymore, which is a huge improvement over how the old optical surveying was done with geodesy in the past. Additionally, we've stopped relying on passive brass marks in the ground, and more we're defining what used to be called the horizontal datum through active GPS stations that run 24/7. That way, their changing coordinates can be monitored in real time. For the vertical datum, instead of looking at latitude and longitude on a flat map, we're looking at elevations. And so the vertical datum is a collection of points on the Earth with known heights, either above or below the geoid. This is why you'll see height above sea level, height above mean sea level on maps, because the geoid is an approximation to mean sea level, and quite honestly, sea level is a lot easier for people to understand than the geoid. So to identify these points, geodesists would place, again, disks in the ground in certain locations. Similar to the horizontal datum, today, GPS is almost completely replaced previous techniques of vertical measurement. One of the main uses of the vertical datum is to measure subsidence or land sinking, which may be the result of development, coastal erosion, regional geology, some other factors. During an evacuation for a major storm, for example, it's critical that we have the information on road heights to avoid residents from becoming trapped in an area of fast rising water. So let's say we have an evacuation route that might have been surveyed as high enough to withstand a flood, but that might subside over the years and be prone to flooding, so that's important to maintain information about how those heights changed, not just what they were many, many years ago. So today, the horizontal and vertical datums make up the greater part of what we call the National Spatial Reference System, which is the spatial reference system for the United States itself. Geodesists, surveyors, anybody interested in precise positioning uses the National Spatial Reference System as their foundation of reference in the United States.
Drew, a little earlier you mentioned gravity also as one of the elements needed to measure the Earth.
Gravity plays such a major role in geodesy, but it's really so hidden from the public eye that it seems almost obscure. For example, knowing the gravity field of the Earth is required to model the orbits of all satellites, which includes GPS. That means we need to know the gravity field, know where the satellites are, and you need to know where the satellites are to use them to position yourself. So in that application, the gravity field is really important. Closer to home, knowing the gravity field is required to know the true height differences between any two points. And this is the part that's really amazing and also very well hidden from the public eye, which is we may not feel it, but as I mentioned, gravity's pull changes from point to point. We don't feel it, but water definitely feels it. And so if you take an area that's extremely flat, such as New Orleans, and you have very minor fluctuations in how gravity is pulling at different locations, those fluctuations are going to determine where areas will flood relative to one another.
It sounds like there are four main elements of geodesy based on what we've talked about so far today, and these include the size and shape of the Earth, the gravity field of the Earth, how all of these things change, and then how we position everything on a changing Earth. And these elements make up the National Spatial Reference System. Why is this system so important?
Kate, you're absolutely right. All of the elements of geodesy are joined together in the National Spatial Reference System. The National System, let me give you a little history before I talk about its importance. The National System was actually begun when Thomas Jefferson created the Survey of the Coast back in 1803. That effort was originally to provide good navigational maps for shipborne commerce in the east coast of the USA. Eventually, this effort broadened into surveys of the North American interior. So as the surveys grew, surveyors needed to establish a common set of reference points to ensure that different maps and charts would all match up. So today, that system has morphed into the National Spatial Reference System. What this means today is, with this system, any location on Earth can be located quickly and accurately in a consistent way with any other point. So in other words, in order to build roads and bridges, conduct land surveys needed for development, or to monitor changes, or just make maps, we need a national system for all these things. As an example, let's say you wanted to build a bridge, and you'd need to know exactly where to start building on each side of the river. If you don't have this information, then your bridge may not meet in the middle. Here's another example. A lot of maps are now digital, and we build them in our computers. So to do this, we take data from a number of different places. Let's say I want to start with the contours from a map from the U.S. Geological Survey. And then I tell my computer to add a few more pieces of information, such as floodplains from a map from the Federal Emergency Management Agency. And I say add the levee heights from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers maps, and say the population statistics from a U.S. Census map. If there isn't one consistent coordinate system tying all these maps together, then the result would be useless. Each of these would not lay on top of each other properly, and I couldn't compare the data. The National Spatial Reference System is that system which gets all of these maps together on the same grid.
Drew, what are some of the other benefits of geodesy?
That's a good question, Kate. Some of the other benefits of geodesy are, for example, to the transportation industry. Geodesy allows the transportation industry to ensure safety and reliability while they also reduce costs. For example, without geodesy, you might have planes landing next to rather than at airports. It helps make sure that the location of ships and the coordinates on a navigational chart line up so the ship stays safely in say, the shipping lane, for example. Geodesy can also help shipping companies save time and money by shortening their routes, reducing the need for extra fuel. So here's a great example. I really love this one. By providing charts that are accurate to centimeters and using GPS technology on a ship, which also can position the ship to centimeters, if those two locations are done consistently, say in the National Spatial Reference System, then you have the ability to know where the bottom of that ship is relative to the bottom of the ocean, to a couple of centimeters. And this means that a ship could put on extra cargo, sink deeper into the water, and still know that they're safely navigating through a channel. And the beauty of that is more cargo directly relates to an economic benefit to the shipping industry. So extra accuracy due to geodetic tools allows the shipping industry to have a pretty significant economic benefit. There are definitely other benefits to geodesy. Some of them are indirect. I'll give you a great example. The National Geodetic Survey, where I work, we manage a network of GPS receivers, as I mentioned, that are for geodetic use. We call this system CORS, which stands for Continuously Operating Reference Stations. However, the National Weather Service has found that this GPS data is useful for their precipitation and space weather forecasts. This is a direct benefit of a geodetic tool being in place that we didn't foresee when we were first putting this network together. So it's not a benefit of geodesy as much as it is an indirect benefit from geodetic tools being in place.
So it sounds like there are many benefits from geodesy that impact our everyday lives. Drew, what is the role of the National Ocean Service in geodesy?
Well, the National Geodetic Survey is just one office in the National Ocean Service. And so while we're responsible for the development and maintenance of the National Spatial Reference System at the National Geodetic Survey, there are related components within the National Ocean Service. For example, the National Ocean Service has offices responsible for tide gauges and navigational charts. Both of these functions are directly tied to the National Spatial Reference System.
What are the tools that NOAA geodesists use to measure the Earth?
Well, as I mentioned, historically, geodesists from the National Geodetic Survey used manual instruments, such as theodolites or distance measuring tools, to determine vertical and horizontal positions. If you're not sure what a theodolite is, I'll bet you've seen one without realizing it. Most of us have, for example, driven down the highway and seen someone standing there with a reflective jersey on, looking through something that looked like a small telescope sitting on top of a yellow tripod. That instrument was likely a theodolite, a level, or a total station. These are all the manual instruments that I mentioned that were used by geodesists for so long. Starting around the 1960s, the National Geodetic Survey started using satellites for global positioning. Around 1984, the first launches of GPS itself occurred, and so GPS continues to this day to really be the primary operational tool of geodetic surveying.
What are some of the applications, or how does NOAA use spatial reference data?
Global positioning data supports a lot of different applications: safe development, efficient transportation and navigation, emergency response effort for both coastal areas as well as the middle of the country. What's especially critical are our abilities to monitor the changes to coordinates. For example, this gives the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers the ability to know changing heights of their levees, which is really important. It allows surveyors in Southern California to track the movements of points, or state departments of transportation to know if their evacuation routes are prone to flooding. More importantly, it really allows us to predict when a currently safe evacuation route might become unsafe due to subsidence. One of the programs that the National Geodetic Survey is focused on is called the National Height Modernization Program. This is where we combine GPS technology with existing surveying techniques to determine elevations for positioning and navigation.
Drew, can you highlight a little more on height modernization? Maybe a little bit about why this is important, or what is the need for this kind of information?
Absolutely. Those are great questions, Kate. Like many of us, geodesists are also looking for ways to do things quickly and accurately. So height modernization it's about getting heights quickly and accurately, but the only way to get accurate heights used to be through a really tedious surveying process called leveling. But when GPS came along, surveying efficiency shot through the roof. The only problem was that GPS couldn't tell you the right information about heights above sea level. But it turns out that if you have a GPS receiver and a good map of the gravity field, or the geoid more specifically, then you can get good, accurate heights quickly from GPS. So this is the basis of the National Height Modernization Program, which we've come to call HeightMod over the years. HeightMod has been a partnership program since its very beginning, where NOAA works with state partners to improve their ability to get these heights from GPS. More recently, as part of HeightMod, NOAA has implemented a project which we call GravD. That stands for Gravity for the Redefinition of the American Vertical Datum. It's a nationwide effort to make sure everyone, no matter what state or territory they live in, can get accurate heights from GPS. And again, accurate heights are critical for responding to events such as flooding. We live in a changing Earth, and the ability to have fast, accurate heights and updates to those heights really allows us to support emergency management in keeping lives and property safe from flooding and similar emergency situations.
Thanks, Drew. Do you have any final closing words for our listeners today?
Well, first, thanks for the invitation. We don't often get to talk about geodesy, and so it's nice to be able to get the word out. It's especially nice for me to not just talk about the science, which I love, but about some of the applications that geodesy has. I really am glad for the chance to tell your listeners why geodesy is important, whether you live at the coast or you live inland. You rely on geodesy in ways that you don't realize. It is actually great to be able to talk about geodesy and how people rely on it. That's especially useful for us to make sure that people are aware of the benefits of geodesy, that you rely on it for transportation, for safety of your bridges and roads, to keep your office building, your school, or your home out of floodplains, to be able to tile that together through the science that I enjoy so much. This really has been a nice opportunity to talk about those benefits as well to your listeners.
Thanks, Drew, for joining us on today's episode of Diving Deeper and talking more about geodesy and how we rely on this every day in more ways than probably most of us realized. To learn more about geodesy, please visit geodesy.noaa.gov. That's all for this week's show. Please tune in on June 3rd for our next episode on resilience.